Welcome to the deep dive. We aim to get you truly informed without drowning you in information. And today, we're tackling something pretty much all of us deal with, that corporate cybersecurity training.
Oh yeah, the mandatory stuff.
Exactly. You know, the modules meant to stop you clicking that one dodgy link. Maybe you've nearly clicked on a test phishing email and felt that that little jolt of panic.
Or just groaned at another mandatory training email landing in the inbox.
Right. But here's the thing. Here's the kicker. Despite all these CCT initiatives, corporate cybersecurity training, research keeps showing a big chunk of employees still click on phishing emails.
Yeah, it's a persistent problem.
And look, this isn't about blaming you, the employee, for, you know, a slip up. It's more about peeling back the layers, trying to figure out why this training often doesn't seem to stick. And crucially, what companies can actually do about it.
Exactly. And that's our mission for this deep dive. We're going to unpack some really interesting groundbreaking research. It's from Daniel Chaney's 2025 dissertation. He looks at CCT through, well, the lens of communication and behavior change theories.
Okay.
We're going to introduce you to his training knowledge flow model, the TKF model. It's a really fresh, employee-focused way to look at training effectiveness designed to actually improve things.
So why should you listen and care? Well, whether you're prepping for a meeting, need to get up to speed on cyber resilience, or you're just, you know, curious, this deep dive gives you a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
A shortcut to understanding why the current training often falls short, and maybe more importantly, what really works to cut down on human error and make organizations, well, stronger against cyber threats.
It's a critical issue.
We've mentioned the frustration, but let's talk scale. Just how big a problem is this globally? What are the costs?
Oh, it's immense and growing fast. I mean, the cybersecurity threats are a huge global issue, costing businesses billions, billions every single year.
Billion.
Yeah, think about this. Just in the U.S., the cost went from around $3.5 billion in 2019 to over $12.5 billion in 2023.
Wow, that's nearly four times higher in just 4 years.
Exactly, a massive jump.
And it's not just the total cost, right? It's the hit per incident, too.
Absolutely. To put a finer point on it, the average data breach cost in 2023, a staggering $4.45 million.
Ooh.
And it's not just the big guys, the Fortune 500s. Small and medium businesses, they feel it too. Average around $500,000 per incident.
That could be crippling for a smaller company.
Totally. And the fallout isn't just financial. There's reputational damage, major operational disruption, regulatory fines. It all adds up. And that's why the cyber insurance market has exploded. It's projected to hit, what, $14.8 billion by 2025?
That really tells a story in itself, doesn't it? The insurance costs.
It's a clear sign of just how big and pervasive the risk feels.
So you'd think with all that money being spent on training, the click rates would be going down. But here's a really startling statistic.
Yeah, this one's sobering.
At any given time, 20%, one in five employees will still click on a phishing email. And that's despite having gone through the training.
20%. It's continuous.
It's not like a single event. It's a constant threat, right? The Anti-Phishing Working Group, they reported over a million attacks in just Q4 of 2023. A million in 3 months. And that's probably lowballing it because so many must go unreported.
That 20% figure, especially with training in place, is, well, it's alarming. It really forces you to ask.
Yeah.
Why? What's behind this persistent human error?
Yeah. What does the research say?
Well, the data suggests that a huge majority, like 95% of data breaches, trace back somehow to lapses in security education and training awareness programs, set of programs.
95%? Wow.
Yeah. And the core issue is this kind of fundamental imbalance.
No.
The attackers, they only need to get lucky once, but employees, you have to be vigilant, you have to succeed every single time you face a potential threat. It's just an inherently tough playing field.
It really is unfair when you put it like that. Okay, so let's dig into why the current training, the CCT, often falls short. What are the main roadblocks researchers see?
Well, one big one is just a lack of standardization.
Okay.
The training is all over the place. Content varies wildly. The methods, you know, is it in-person, online, self-paced, instructor-led?
Hmm.
Even how often it's done.
Yeah.
There's no sort of agreed upon gold standard for CCT.
So it's kind of a wild west. That makes sense. I've definitely seen a huge range in quality myself. What's another barrier?
Another really key one is a lack of relatability and applicability.
Meaning?
Meaning that training content is often just too generic. It doesn't keep up with how fast phishing attacks evolve, how personalized they get.
Right. Attackers use current events or target you based on your job.
Exactly. They adapt really quickly. So this one-size-fits-all training, it just doesn't work well against attacks tailored specifically to you. If the training doesn't feel directly relevant to your daily work, it's really hard for it to actually change your behavior.
It's like trying to teach someone advanced swimming from an old textbook while they're actually trying to navigate, I don't know, whitewater rapids in real time. The methods just aren't matching the threat.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. Okay, what's the next hurdle?
A third big issue, and this one's often missed, is a lack of theory-based design.
Theory-based design.
Yeah. Most CCT is what researchers call atheoretical.
Mm.
It's not really built on solid principles of how people actually learn or, more importantly, how they change their behavior.
Mm.
It often assumes you, the employee, will use slow, careful, rational thinking, what psychologists call system two, when you get a suspicious email.
But that's not usually how we react, is it?
Not really. In reality, most quick decisions, like glancing at an email and deciding what to do, are driven by fast, intuitive, gut-feeling system one thinking. The training is often designed for a thinking process we don't actually use in that moment.
So we're kind of designing the training for the wrong type of thinking, the wrong brain system. That feels like a really big insight. Is there one more piece?
Yeah. The final piece, often, is a lack of employee-centric focus.
Okay.
Too often, training is just reactive. It's done ad hoc, maybe after an incident, or it's driven purely by needing to tick compliance boxes.
Checking the box, yeah.
Right. There isn't always a genuine focus on understanding and changing employee behavior. Organizations often don't dig into why the training isn't working for the employee or what support that employee actually needs to succeed.
Which brings us perfectly to Daniel Chaney's TKF model, the training knowledge flow model. You said it's a potential game changer. What's the core idea behind it?
The core idea is really a shift in perspective. Instead of just focusing on, say, training logistics, what content gets delivered, how it's managed, it pushes for an employee-centric perspective.
Mm.
It's all about understanding the flow of knowledge.
The flow.
Yeah, tracking how that knowledge travels, and crucially, finding out where that flow might be breaking down between the training session and, you know, your actual day-to-day work.
Ah, okay. So it traces the journey of that knowledge. And the TKF model, it breaks this journey into three stages, sequential stages.
Exactly. Three stages, and they build on each other. Think of it as a progression.
Okay, let's walk through them. Stage one is TKF stage one, the employee as learner. So this is about the initial take up, right? When you first get the training, is it effective? Do you get it? Do you even value it? It's about your perception of the content, the clarity, the delivery.
What's really fascinating here, what the research found at this stage, they looked at all sorts of training quality factors, engagement, perceived value, did knowledge increase, skill development, pacing, structure, all that stuff.
Right.
But only one thing significantly separated the compliant employees from the non-compliant ones.
Right.
Perceived job relevance.
Just that one, of course.
Just that one, significantly, which strongly backs up adult learning theory, right?
Yep.
If the training doesn't feel directly connected to your job, your tasks, it's just not likely to stick long term. It has to feel applicable.
Okay, that makes sense. So stage one is about effective learning driven by relevance. Then we get to TKF stage two, the employee as practitioner. This sounds like the making it stick part.
Exactly. This focuses on training transfer. Can you actually take what you learned in that training module and apply it to your real work? Does it translate from theory into practice?
This is where the rubber meets the road then.
Absolutely. If the training doesn't transfer, if it stays in the classroom, its value is seriously undermined. Now, interestingly, the research here found something surprising.
Oh.
They didn't find significant differences between the compliant and non-compliant groups in how they perceived this transfer.
Huh. So transfer is critical, but maybe hard to measure accurately just by asking people.
That's what it suggests. It doesn't mean transfer isn't vital. It absolutely is. But maybe our current ways of measuring that perceived transfer aren't quite sensitive enough to capture the real differences in application. The concept of applying the learning is still critical, though.
Got it. Which leads us naturally to the final stage, the ultimate goal. TKF stage three, the employee as security actor. This is about the long game, right? Consistent, secure behavior in the workplace.
Precisely. Are you reliably, repeatedly applying what you learned to spot and resist phishing attempts day after day?
And what actually predicts this consistent real-world action?
Well, this stage draws heavily on something called the integrated behavior model. It points to a few key things. Obviously, your knowledge and your skills matter.
Sure.
But also crucial is something called salience. That's basically how real and urgent the threat feels to you personally and how confident you are that you can handle it.
Confidence. Okay.
Yeah. And that confidence has two parts. There's self-efficacy. Do you believe in your own ability to perform the secure action? And response efficacy. Do you believe that performing that action will actually make a difference?
Okay. So I can do it and it's worth doing.
Exactly. And then critically, there's the influence of the environmental constraints, the workplace context itself.
Which brings us to maybe the most surprising finding you mentioned earlier, this huge disconnect.
Yes. This is really striking. The research found a massive gap between how well all these factors, skills, salience, environment, predict training compliance.
Like how well you do on the quiz right after the module.
Exactly. Or in a simulated phishing test immediately after training. Versus how well they predict actual workplace compliance, your real behavior, when a genuine threat lands in your inbox weeks or months later.
And how big is this gap?
It's significant. Those factors, skills, salience, environment, they explain a decent chunk of the variance in training compliance, often over 30%.
Right.
But when you look at real-world workplace compliance, they explain much less, often under 10%.
Wow. Under 10%.
Yeah. So what does that mean? It means those post-training scores, those pass grades on modules or simulations, they might be seriously overstating how ready employees actually are for the real thing.
So for you listening, the big takeaway is just because you ace the training quiz doesn't automatically mean you're consistently safe in your day-to-day work. It's a very different context.
A very different context. And zooming out again, looking across all the stages of the TKF model, all the behavioral theories they examined, one factor consistently stood out.
Let me guess.
The environment.
The workplace environment. It emerged as the single most robust, most consistent predictor of actual compliant behavior.
So having a supportive environment around you really matters.
Massively. Clear policies, strong norms among your peers about security, good structural support, all that consistently predicts safer behavior.
And didn't the research find something even more powerful about the environment? Like a safety net?
Yes. It found that a supportive environment can act like a kind of compensatory scaffold or a safety net, especially for employees where maybe the initial training didn't quite click.
So even if someone struggled with the training itself, even then, if they're in a strong supportive environment, that environment actually helps strengthen the link between whatever skills they do have and their ability to act securely. The environment can kind of prop up or maintain compliance.
That's incredibly powerful. Puts a real onus on organizations, doesn't it?
It really does. It raises a crucial point for them. Investing in building that supportive environment, clear policies, visible peer support, easy ways to report issues, management buy-in. It's not just nice to have, it's critical. It can maintain secure behavior or even help recover it, even if individual factors like knowledge or confidence are maybe a bit weaker. It's a huge lever.
Okay, let's try and wrap this up for everyone listening. What are the key takeaways here? Effective cybersecurity training. It's not just about dumping content on people, is it?
Not at all. This deep dive really shows it's a strategic communication act.
Strategic communication.
It has to be designed carefully. Yeah. It absolutely must feel relevant to your job. It needs to build your confidence, your efficacy, not just scare you. Fear appeals often backfire long term.
Right. Relevance, confidence.
And crucially, it has to be consistently reinforced and supported by your actual work environment. That support system is key.
And the TKF model helps organizations do that, move beyond just ticking boxes.
That's the goal. It helps them understand where the knowledge flow might be breaking down for you, the employee, and how to improve your actual behavior as a security actor. It shifts the strategy away from just fear towards empowerment, building capability, building confidence.
So ultimately, being cyber resilient, it isn't just about what you know in your head.
No. It's about this dynamic interplay, isn't it? Between your knowledge, your skills, your belief that your actions matter, and maybe most importantly, the signals and support you get from the environment you work in every single day.
Which leads perfectly to a final thought for you to take away and maybe mull over.
Yeah, if we accept that a truly supportive workplace environment is perhaps the strongest predictor of secure behavior, what's specific, concrete, actionable steps could your organization take right now to make sure its environment is actively amplifying and not accidentally hindering your cybervigilance?
A really important question for organizations and employees to think about.